The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
Go to my website, jmoore.com. A lot of stand-up comedy coming up. I'm excited about it. Got Flappers coming up March 30th. Flappers, March 30th. That's a Thursday night in Burbank, California. And then, of course, April 1st. Look at me. Levity Live in Oxnard. Amazon banner. Look at Pete Turner coming in. JJ, I just fluffed Trash Truck's college fund by using your Amazon banner. I bought a few things, including a tactical pen, because the pen is mightier than the sword. But a tactical pen is mightier still, because it fits nicely in your adversary's, well, you get the idea. Also, I bought some podcast gear for a client that wants me to create, produce their own show. Turns out businesses want to break it down too. I love you, JJ. Seriously, you make the world a better place, and everyone deserves to hear that kind of praise more. Keep doing what you do. I love you, Pete. Pete Turner, using the Amazon banner at jmoore.com. Hey, Pete, I love you too. That's why you're on More Stories, because I love me some Pete Turner. Thanks for using that Amazon banner. You guys, that's the best way you can help this podcast. Go to jmoore.com. And if you're shopping on Amazon, go through my website and hit Amazon. It doesn't cost you anything. And they put money into my son's college fund. Get yourself a tactical pen like Pete Turner. Thank you, Pete Turner.
Put your name on it. Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or a woman. Put your name on it.
Well, I'd like to hear about it, potheads.
How the fuck you gonna know how to be great if you don't study greatness? Look at the game change.
Donuts.
If you wanna battle, it's either that you will or you won't.
You know, you're not a bad looking man, Mr. Gals.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
There's something wrong with us. Something very, very wrong with us.
Hey, man.
Pete Turner, yeah, time, written about a lot with Mick Taylor, because in Sway, Destroying Your Notion of Circular Time and Time Waits for No One, Time on My Side is a cover and not him. But you won, you're back on More Stories and United States Spy, who, so like, if you go to other countries, do they want to, are they, well, they're probably allowed to kill you.
There definitely have been people that have said, get that guy and kill him. That certainly has happened. There's been intel on that, for sure.
How many,
happened.
How many different countries? I mean, one's enough. But.
Yeah, I mean, one's enough.
One?
Yeah.
Oh, that's it? That's the problem, then. What's the probs?
Yeah. Even by name, because, you know, I normally, like, I'm Pete. A lot of times people give out fake names and stuff, but I'm Pete. And so they'll spell it wrong, but you can see that it's my name.
Why am I hung up on the fact that they spelled Pete wrong?
Well, because, like, in Arabic, they don't say Pete, they say Beat. Oh, Mr. Beat, would you like a pepperoni pizza? You know, because it's all B's. And so they spell it B-E-E-T-E or something.
My man, Pete Turner, we're going to talk about liminal time. You all asked right. me about it. There's an academia paper to be written.
That's
with
right.
You and the other guy and the other guy and the other guy.
Yeah.
And you wanted me on board because I move people around on
That's
stage.
Right.
And I was very honored. You guys, this is going to be a trippy episode in theory. Use the Amazon banner at jmoore.com. Look at my man Troy emailing me. morestories3737@gmail.com. JJ, I've listened to almost every podcast you've recorded. I've enjoyed them all, but damn, the Deanna Adler episode had me fucking crying like a baby, but laughing too. Her tale is one being repeated all across this country today, given the rising state of opioid addiction. I'm going to buy her book through your website link. The Amazon banner, jmoore.com, of course. Masterful interview and episode. I actually listened to it twice, mainly because Stephen was so distracting. Keep up the good work. Troy, I kicked Stephen Adler out of the interview.
You had to. It was distracting.
I just saw that giant hole that poor lady was carrying around.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's
he
more.
Stop being like her 18-year-old son and just harrying her, you know, giving her the business nonstop. It was hilarious.
It's fascinating. He said he stopped. He did drugs because he had so much resentment towards her.
Yeah.
And then you hear that she had no love ever. She had no ever. Nobody hugged her. Her whole childhood, they died in Auschwitz, for crying out loud.
Crazy, yes.
And he's like, I was resentful. It's like, no, you're an addict. You just did it.
Yeah.
So liminal time in modern psychology, it's only pretty much written about as a negative.
Yeah.
But it's all I know. And liminal, L-I-M-I-N-A-L?
Liminal, yeah. Is A-L, yeah.
Like that time between being there. Like you have a job, you have a family, you get divorced, you get fired, and there's like 10, 11 months of what do I do? What's my routine? Where do I go? Like, what am I doing? And then you get another job, liminal time's over, you're back.
Yeah.
But as an actor and as a comic, all I know is liminal time. I wake up, there's nothing to do in the middle of Albany, New York in the winter all day.
Yeah.
And then they take me to the club and then, hey everybody, how you doing tonight?
Yeah.
Then I'm there.
Right.
And then I'm alive, and that, you know, but that liminal time is when I think if done correctly, it's the only time you have complete free reign to go within and say, why did I get fired? How the hell am I going to get another job? And that's where you discover you. Hmm. So I think it has the most benefit for a human being than quote unquote regular time.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think you and I have talked a little bit about liminality in general and how you talk in terms of time and I talk in terms of space and the liminal space that someone occupies. So I see this from a different perspective because you're the performer, you're up front, and I see liminal bubbles. Like Corey has a bubble, I have a bubble, you have a bubble, this village has bubbles, and I go inside those and I try to understand their reality as best as I can understand it. So they have their own specific reality. They have the reality they'll allow me to see if I've earned that trust. And then I've got to take those liminal imprints that I try to gather as like a liminal traveler going into these different time bubbles, and I bring them back to my client, the Army in this case, the State Department, and try to explain the liminalities that I see so that we can do what you do, which is gather this liminal experience together.
Well, it's not liminal to the people whose bubble you're going into, which is fascinating. Right. It's your liminal time, and you need to report the liminal space that they're living in, which to them is not anything but their space.
It's just their reality, yeah, exactly.
And I guess we can combine time and space because space and spatial relation is not a human invention. You are whatever unit of measure we come up with away from me now.
Right.
And when you're up in the Bay Area, you're that unit of measure, whatever you want to put on it, but right. It's still that space. Time is a human invention. Man made time, a grid over how long before I saw you in that other space.
Yeah.
So like a caveman sees another caveman, and then time goes by, he sees him again. How many times did the sun go up, down, and then up again? That's one.
Right.
So we'll call that a day. Okay. And then the amount of hours and the amount of minutes and the calendar was like voted on and agreed upon and lobbied, right? AD and BC. Like Christ wasn't born at zero because then it would make sense. Before yeah. Christ and then zero, then one. Like, no. So space is not an invention. Time is. But the energy of, like, what am I doing? So liminal space is better. What is it about that liminality that causes such unease when you're going to a job? That's also, you don't know when, how long that job's going to last. You don't know if you're going to get fired, the pressure to produce. So I don't know why there's an even separation between liminal and non-liminal time, because people listening to this right now are going, I have a job, I go there every day, I don't know what the hell's going on right now.
Yeah.
This question came to me in the moment, so yeah. I just laid it on your lap.
But I think when you're going to your job, and you don't feel comfortable in that reality that you're sharing with other people, maybe your boss has it out for you, maybe you just don't, you know, some people are just wired to be anxious at work. You know, they always worry about their livelihood so they can protect their families and everything. That would create a liminal, from my point of view, that would create a liminal negative energy where you're constantly under stress. And so you're sharing that with the other people around you. And especially if it's a toxic work environment, you know, in general, if you have a bad boss. I don't know if that answered your question, but that's what I'm trying to sort through.
No, it's interesting because, like, I don't know anybody that's like, I have a great boss. It's just, I love it every day. Like, some, obviously, I've had some, you've had some. Liminality. the quality of ambiguity or disorientation that occurs in the middle stage of rituals when participants no longer hold their pre-ritual status but have not yet begun the transition to the status they will hold when the ritual is complete. So I think the Latin word limen means threshold.
Yeah.
So I spend the day not, there's no ritual for me because the ritual is just walking to the stage. I've got it, I've simplified it. So I've actually increased my liminal time by simplifying my job.
Yeah.
Like all day you worry about your bits and you work right. And you're like, no, I'm going to go up and I'm going to tell stories that happened to me. So when they say, here he is, like that's when the ritual begins and ends right there.
Right.
Or the show itself is the ritual. So for a soldier, mm-hmm. You take fire, and then it's just quiet. And then that's reality. And your reality becomes liminal time, because when are we going to get fired on again? So as a soldier, I want to hear your perspective of this, because it's all liminal. Your liminal space gets 180 degrees turned upside down, like an hourglass, because people are shooting at you, and that's life. Whoa. Holy shit, I'm present.
Yeah.
And then there's no more shooting, and you're in a Jeep with three other dudes going back to get some food, get some chow, get some rest, and then that becomes the liminal time, because you never know when you're going to get...
I put a reminder on, because I want to come back to that and answer that. But at first, I want to go back to you being on stage. That may be your liminal threshold when you get into that moment in your liminal time at that point. But the audience, it's different for them. You know, they're there and they're waiting to share that experience with you. They haven't crossed over the threshold. Yeah, they're there. They're having a couple of drinks. They're with their girl, their dude, or whatever. But you start to pull them into a common liminal experience with you, with your stories, with your boomerangs, with your hummingbirds, all those things that you do. You are conducting. You're sort of like Jim Morrison. You're up there as the shaman creating this new reality for these people in this moment.
Cancel my subscription to the resurrection.
Exactly.
Send my credentials to the house of detention. I got some friends in there. So let's say you lose a job. You're between jobs, you have kids, you're not, that's your liminal space.
Okay.
Then it becomes the human being's job, just like a comedian's job, to pull those around him, that audience, in that kitchen, in that living room, like towards him.
Yeah.
He does, like he still has stories. He's not a comic,
right.
But he's still a parent.
Yeah.
He's still a son.
Right.
Or a brother or a sister.
Sure.
So it's, now I'm questioning the entire, the word itself and the application, like, but it's, I've never heard it used as a positive. So as a soldier, is it true that it gets inverse after combat? Because straight, or like when you go to jail, like you just had Shaka Singora on the Break It Down podcast, Pete Turner and my buddy John, you guys podcast, the Break It Down show is so great. And subscribe to that, hit that subscribe button. And like Shaka Singora, you know, 19 years in jail, and I had Damian Eccles on, you know, he was on death row for 17 years. So then when they get out, that's the liminal space, is the regular becomes, whoa, I don't know how to do straight time. I don't know how to do non-combat time.
Yeah. Well, I'm popping my reminder off because I want to try to answer your question. So the liminal reality, I think, for a soldier, for those that don't know, I've been on over 1,000 combat missions. I've been out there a lot, and I've seen a lot of different units, a lot of different people, and how they respond and how they learn to deal in that space. And most combat patrols are not in any way lethal, but you always have that tension, that rubber band's always pulled tight, waiting for lethality to come. And so it's almost like a release where you can get back to some other time. But in that moment, your reality that you're experiencing that time is like there is a threat and it's everywhere. And one of the things I have to try to do as this liminal kind of traveler guide guy is go, see that lady right there who's walking down the street with her kid and her sandals? She's not freaked out about being blown up right now. She's just chilling, walking like a mom. We're over here under, you know, with armor and electronic warfare prevention measures and all this other stuff, and we're under this tension. And so the two things, the comedian can't gather those two things together because they're so different. There's no familiarity in their liminal spaces.
Or he does. Or that's why it's not. Or that's why it's comfortable, because I am the lady.
Right, yeah. You are able to combat. Go, look at that lady over there, and you're able to break it down. And that's one of the reasons why we want you on the paper, is that gathering of those people. Because that's the part that we struggle with. Our reality is so strong, so tense, that we can't liminally move over. Or we expect someone who's got this... We expect Shaka at 15 years old to all of a sudden want to give up his whole reality and make these choices that aren't even possible in his world, in his liminal space. He can't make that choice of saying, I'm going to stay in school and not make enough money when all my friends are slinging and, you know, banging and all the other things they're doing, these choices they're making. It's not possible for him. That's not part of his reality. It's not part of his infrastructure of the mind. You know, he can't do that, but we want him to.
TrueCar.com, TrueCar.com, my friends. I'm a TrueCar user. And guess what? Just like TrueCar users like me, I saved, on average, over $3,000 off MSRP. I'm not going to tell you exactly how much I saved. That'd be a little rude. TrueCar.com, over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. There's over 13,000 TrueCar certified dealers waiting for you. If you're ready to buy, and you are, visit TrueCar, TrueCar.com. Get the TrueCar app like I have and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. You'll know what your neighbor paid for the same car that you want. You'll know what the fair price is. You register, you're going to see real pricing on actual inventory. This is competitive pricing offered to you only by a TrueCar certified dealer. TrueCar.com, get the TrueCar app, get yourself a ride. So it really hit me when you said about you guys are on patrol, and most patrols are non-lethal.
There's
like, you're not going to die going on patrol, otherwise right. We wouldn't have anybody left to send over
right. Or
bring back, more importantly, I guess. And there's a lady in sandals, like carrying groceries, and a little kid next to her.
Yeah.
And it made me think of Black Hawk Down, like the book, not the movie, because it's an MTV video compared to the book, which is one of the best I've ever read.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And that goddamn donkey just keeps walking up and down the street.
Yeah.
Never gets hit by a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
That, not caring, that the sound doesn't even bother him. Like, I mean, I don't want to bring beasts of burden into this, but that lady doesn't have the tension because, you know, the only zen you bring on a mountaintop is the zen you bring up there. You guys brought the tension. You're the reason the tension is there. You have interloped into somebody's day-to-day routine with all this armor, night vision goggles. They think we're fucking Tron.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have a care in the world. And it's odd. The first thing I thought of was, you're bringing it there. You've created within yourself, like, and by having all that shit on, like, yeah. I think if me and a couple buddies went over there in, like, blue jeans and T-shirts and were respectful, probably wouldn't be as tense as you guys are on patrol.
Right.
Because you're carrying the things that kill.
Yeah.
So people want to kill the people that can kill.
Yeah.
So the question is then, how do you keep soldiers from feeling that tension? And I'm asking you, is the question, how do we keep soldiers from feeling tension in this liminal space? I'm in a foreign country, I'm a foreigner, and I'm there to sort of, uninvited to by the people I'm seeing day to day.
Right.
To sort of keep them safe and make sure everybody gets to the market on time and the bridges are cool. How do you have the soldiers move, I guess, laterally into the other bubble of that lady's liminal space?
This is a great question, and it takes a second to try to capture it. And I'm going to try to do what I call a tabula rasa, like where I blank my brain out and try to think, how do I explain this specifically, like 3-year-old style. So the first thing is don't underestimate the threat that's there. You and I could go in jeans and T-shirts and a couple of little motorcycles, and in most days have no problem ever, except for that day when we had all the problems in the world. So there is a reason for that tension. The other thing is a commander has an ethical obligation to prepare his troops for combat. And if you don't do that and you get into combat, there's no account of that. That's it. You've not done your basic job. You've not prepared your people. So you begin to have like an inversion of ethics, where the things that are right can become, you reach what I call ethical saturation, where you have to be prepared for combat. You have to be prepared to deal with females and villages properly. You have to be able to help farmers farm. And at some point, you can't do all of those things well. So you have this inversion of ethics, and that also creates tension because people are trying to accomplish things, and it's like, I'm just here to kill. I'm an infantryman. Get out of my way. Why is Pete with us? You know, oh, he's the ice cream man, so, okay, he can stay and hang out, but why are these other people? You know, so there's all these questions, all these whys, right? So, and it's also a... it's also a cross-cultural situation. And anytime you enter cultures that are new, not so much for you because you've got a lot of experience, but you can go into a new room and you've got to feel it out. And you probably don't even feel the uncomfortable thing that like a new comic would. It'd be like, this is weird. This is a black room or a Latino room or something like that where they're not used to that. They're still fine, but they've got to deal cross-culturally. So all of those things play into this bubble action. And the thing about the bubble is when you're in the bubble as a military unit and you're trying to establish what I'm trying to get them to move liminally, I want them to slide one bubble over closer to the locals. So I'll point out that, hey, there's a lady wearing sandals over there. You know, yeah, we don't have electronic warfare measures at the top level that we're supposed to have them, you know. We can still do a foot patrol here. It's not going to be as dangerous. I've got to get them to give up the nature of them, their liminal space, and cross that threshold into a new liminal space that's completely different for them. And I can do it over time, but I have to gain trust to be able to do that. And same thing for the villagers as well.
The conversations that, like, you and I will have, they get really deep, and then my questions come faster than you can get the answer to the, like, question one.
Right.
And with the villagers not feeling the stress of living in that liminal space of I'm in between, I'm not home, I want to be in a living room in Arkansas, I want to have my fried chicken and mashed potatoes and watch some football. But then you go all the way across the world to do this other thing. It makes me think of the video of the guy drawing what is reality, what is liminal reality, and that's three blind guys looking at the elephant. One guy's in the front, he goes, it's a snake. Another guy's in the back goes, whatever, it's a smaller snake. And another guy's on the side, he goes, it's a wall.
Right, exactly.
And he goes, they're all right, or they're all wrong.
Right.
And he goes, so the back of the elephant is earth, and you have to have fundamental values and core mores, and that's your foundation. And then on top of that, it's shared beliefs. So it's like this pyramid that goes up, assumptions all the way up. And that's like, see, that's like the United States. Like that's one.
Right.
And then over in the Middle East, it's, okay, what are your core values?
Sure.
It's the Quran. It's the mullahs. It's, I'm a Christian. I live in, you know, this Saudi place and I, you know, they let me go about my stuff. So I have respect for them. Like my values is this. And then my shared beliefs with my immediates, and then the people outside that are not Christian, they're Muslim, and then my assumptions and this. So that's another pyramid.
Right.
And then the bubble goes around it. That's the bubble.
Right.
So nothing leaves that bubble. Nothing leaves that bubble. Exactly. So nothing can come in.
Right.
And then somebody comes up like, hey, we're Dutch. We want to colonize that. Like just, I'm moving my body on a podcast. Like then all of a sudden like, hey, everybody, like they just pop up in the middle like, we just happen to have a big oil contract. We're Dutch and we're cool and we're wearing rifles and all, but our liminal space, our core values and beliefs are we're here to get money and get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
So that's an interloper to both. So all three are right because that's why they're there. Nobody's there. Nobody's around. Yes. Nobody's living in their bubble and seeing the world through their lens because they're wrong.
Yeah.
You are right because of the windshield you're looking out. That's exactly. Why I'm right. Like, I'm me. Like, I'm the star of my movie. Not and all wrong. those roads, all those cars you see on the bridge going by down in the distance, it's like everybody in that car thinks it's them. You think it's you. Corey thinks it's her.
Right.
So what must happen is there has to be, like, a puncture in one of these bubbles.
Yes.
Where you can just, like, hey, Pete sent me.
Yeah.
Like a speakeasy. Like, you have to open a little window in that big door to have an exchange.
Yeah.
But I think what's missing... I'm pretty sure, is to get both people to have that little window open at the same time is impossible because the people inside the bubble don't want the window open.
Right.
Because they'll might be proven their morals are wrong.
Yeah.
They might be told, why don't you just not go there? They wouldn't have tension for you and they wouldn't have to walk around soldiers on the way to school. And the people in, say, Afghanistan might be told,
right.
Yeah, why, you know,
you just clean water is not like a kooky thing.
Yeah.
You know, you should be able to read. So nobody wants that window open.
Right.
You're the guy that identified there are bay windows. There's an empty lot. That was my metal cock hitting the floor. Sorry. I just had some robot sex. You're the guy that says there's an empty lot. Forget it. I know. Pete, like, reach for his.
I'm like, his size. Should I pull my butt plug out? Is it time?
That's what he calls a shoulder holster. So, like, you're the guy that goes, not only is there a window, there's an empty lot that we can just hang out in if we could all just realize the other side and how they feel isn't a threat to what we're doing here and vice what they. The ideology, if it's understood and spoken, then it's not being acted out violently.
Yeah.
If you're talking to an Afghan or a member of ISIS, I should specify, and go, like, what is it? Like, why do you want to kill Americans and Western? And he's explaining it, and you go, okay.
Yeah.
I can see that according to the book, you know. But I see it like, as long as that conversation is happening, nobody's fighting.
I'm glad you brought that whole thing up.
Thank you. Because I had no idea what I was doing there.
No, but I think you're exactly onto something here. And the
Corey's thing like, are you stone?
Well, but let me help out the audience. Yeah. There's a guy named Dave Gray, and he designs that whole cartoon, and he talks about it. So they should look at that Dave Gray illustration.
We'll put it up on the More Stories YouTube page.
And one of the things he talks about, and this is exactly what I do, and this is what you do probably without realizing it also, is that pyramid is built on those experiences. I've got to pop out of my bubble, which this isn't an easy thing to do. It's sort of like being a comedian. Like, I think I'm as funny as Jeselnik or D'Elia or any of those guys, right? But I'm not a comedian, so I'm not. Anybody can play a D chord and run it up and down the neck like Willie Nelson, but you can't do it like Willie Nelson. It looks easy because he's fucking Willie Nelson. So doing this stuff, surrendering your own liminality for the purpose of getting into their culture. This is where the cross-cultural stuff comes in. I have to understand that. I don't have to accept what they do, but I have to be able to understand the path where they get to it. There's a girl right now somewhere in Hollywood who's hanging on to her life by you know, her fingertips. She's eating out of dumpsters, that kind of thing. I can't presume to understand her condition. All I can do is try to slowly see how she makes her decisions and see what her goals are. It's the same thing with these tribal people. Where, you know, they're Islamic, they're village people, not the village people, but they're farmers, all these different things that are totally different than my experience. I have to go in there again, blank slate, tabula rasa, and start to understand how they make decisions as groups, how these elders influence things so that I can gain access to their bubble. Because they'll let me have a bubble, but it won't be the real bubble. It'll be one off to the side. That's Disneyland.
Well, that's not access to their bubble.
Right, exactly. They've created one for me. They
don't want you in there.
Right. It's sufficing or satisficing behavior, right?
Would you rather put your money in the bank and earn less than 1% or be the bank's landlord? Be paid over 7%. Yeah, I know what you're going to say. RichUncles.com or 855-RICH-UNCLES. RichUncles.com. That's what's up. Of course, money in the bank is safe. While commercial real estate has risks, it's not guaranteed. RichUncles.com. Rich Uncles is an REIT, R-E-I-T, real estate investment trust that pools your money with other investors and rents to creditworthy tenants like Walgreens and Chase Bank. They're going to pay. This strategy is used by wealthy, wealthy investors to collect rent, distribute cash to investors each month. That could be you and me. It's being made available to all of us thanks to RichUncles.com. RichUncles.com, 855 Rich Uncles. You can go to their website and check it out, richuncles.com. Rich Uncles is a REIT, a Reggae Tier 2 offering. That's interesting because you meet with an elder, you're in Afghanistan, and you make inroads. I remember you told a great story in the More Stories podcast, Pete Turner, Break It Down Show. Listen to it. It's fantastic. Shaka Singor, you guys. You know what's amazing to you guys is, I'll say, you guys want Natalie Dawn? It's really interesting. I think she's up in the Bay Area. And you say yes. And then I go, oh, I can't believe I didn't ask that.
and like with Shaka, like, I can't believe I didn't ask that.
Yeah.
And you delivered me Johnny Walker, so everything else is gravy after that. So your reality, my reality, their reality, and if they don't want you to know their reality, they have to fabricate a bit off to the side, as you put it.
Yeah.
Another reality. You're already an interloper. Like, time travel houses all got started. We're
sure.
talking about time travel.
Yeah.
Not like I'm in a machine and
right.
all of a sudden crabs are coming out of the sea and it's the end of days. And we all know I would have eaten every fucking crab leg on Earth before the goddamn end of time, because that's what I do.
Crab legs.
Oh, God. I'll eat them till I have gout. So now there's a new thing in the mix, and that is make-believe liminality.
Yes.
That you are believing is real. It's like if you're in a marriage and you believe for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, like, wow, I'm like really scary. I'm a bad person. Like, why is this person even with me? And then you file for divorce and you realize, oh, wow, this person's overtly hostile now that I'm away from it, out of the bubble.
Sure.
And what they said about me was not true at all. And that's why that person feels that way about me. That's why this person. So how do you identify when you're meeting with elders overseas that you're either being told the truth, because they have to be good at it,
mm-hmm.
they have to create reality.
Yeah.
That's not real reality. And when, can you give an example of a time where you realized, like, oh, wow, that whole month, this guy's been fucking with me?
Yeah, I can totally do that. So one of the things is it's a sufficing or satisficing behavior, right? So
say that again.
Satisficing or sufficing, depending on who you're talking about and which theory it is.
I like
satisficing. I'm trying to satisfy. So here comes
and
the
suffice.
Army. Right, and suffice. So here comes the army. They're like a biker gang. They come to town. You're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You're coming here to my diner to eat all my food. Cool. You're going to pay. Maybe not. Okay, great. Well, how do I survive this moment? And that's how you fabricate these liminal, false liminal bubbles, right? But because we're the army and we're not really good and we're not really trained at this stuff, we believe that we're in the actual bubble. And we're not really worried about anything else because it's so uncomfortable for us because we're not trained. We're that new comic in that room we've never been in. We don't understand the cues. I can, mostly through experience and watching multiple units come in and make the same mistake. Like, let me just try to not do that. And I slowly found what to do by just not doing what the guy before me did. Stop making assumptions, start listening, and just ask. And I'll ask questions a lot of times. I do this on my show. I would tell my interpreter all the time, like, I'm going to ask questions that are dumb that you know I know the answer to. I want you to ask those questions. Don't turn to me and look and go, Pete, you already know this. I'm doing this because I'm trying to create a portal to have that person pop over into my bubble to see, hey, Pete's not such a bad guy. That's why I bring ice cream out to the army units. Hey, Pete's not such a bad guy, you know.
So those questions be like, is that where I go to talk to so-and-so, even though you've been briefed about
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Ramadan is like, it's like our Easter, right?
Well, and let me tell you about Ramadan. You know, I'm glad you're interested in it. Wow, I'm smiling.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
smiling.
Yes.
And then, so you're going with a fake reality that
right.
you... A, give a shit, and B, are curious about it and
right.
don't know it.
Yeah.
To get them to ameliorate their fake reality.
Yeah, they pop that bubble that I gave them, and it's a bullshit bubble. That's why I tell my interpreter. And the interpreter is so in the moment, right, that he'll easily, until they get used to me, half the time, they'll be like, no, you know that isn't like Easter. And they'll look at me, and I'm like, shut up, Norton. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, Mo, ask the question. Remember what I told you before? And they're like, oh, yeah, that's right. So they ask it. And invariably, the other guy's like, wait, you actually give a shit about me?
Yeah.
So here's my story. So we had a guy that we were partnered with, and it took me a long time to build trust. And I thought I had trust, and I thought I'd done it right because I know how to do this stuff. And I gave him just kind of goofing around. I was trying to think of things to do. And when Americans, all we told you before, our culture is do. And the State Department and the Army and everything. I want to do something. So I create this flag for the Valley. I'm like, you guys should have like a flag like this to show it. The Valley where everybody lived in. Like, so in this river valley, we're all in Afghanistan where all the farmers are. And so I create this goofy flag and we're talking about it. And the next thing I know, the governor's in front of a bunch of elders a couple days later and he's showing them the flag. And he's like, look at this flag that we're going to have. And I'm like, oh shit, I created this flag. Like, I created this false thing that he now feels obligated, because we're friends, to show these elders, but it wasn't real. It was all bullshit, you know?
Well, let's go beat by beat. So yeah. Forgive me for jumping in here.
No, do it.
Not a lot of interruptions.
Yeah, you're doing great.
I've been defeated. Somebody's all up in my bubble. Rattling around, throwing fucking tomahawks. You got a bubble, huh? Nice, let's wreck. So the flag as a presentation, as a gift, was it like official United States?
No, military? No, it's just like I went on PowerPoint and I drew a mountain. You know, it's like took me 10 minutes to make it. And they grew a lot of pomegranates. I put a giant pomegranate by the mountain and I had a bullshit little river going through. And I'm like, something that represents the valley. You guys should have something to create unity, right? Because I put myself...
Hold on. But you did create it.
I did, yeah.
Because of the PowerPoint.
Yeah.
It represented the valley.
Yes.
You gave it to them saying, just something I created.
Yeah.
You did not lie. And I think this is really important. I think you're between liminal space here in this discussion because what you did wasn't shitty. It wasn't a lie. You made the flag. You made it for them.
Sure.
Because there's a picture of their mountain and the pomegranates and the little stream.
Yeah.
And they would have said, like, actually, there's no stream here. You're thinking about the other valley over there.
Right.
But you're presenting it as you come in with your bullshit fake reality. I'm like, I don't know if Corey caught it. I'm like, what's fake about it? You made a flag and gave it to him.
What's fake is I've done what the Army always does. Like, here's your solution. We made a flag for the Iraqis when we toppled the government. We're like, here's your new flag. We got rid of all the Islamic colors. You can look it up.
This is what the whales are saying.
Yeah. Here's it. It had baby blue and yellow. And it's like, this represents the Tigris. The Americans brought them a new flag. This is the new flag of Iraq. And I'd always mocked that. And here I am doing the same thing. These people don't need my flag.
No, but you know that. And you presented it as, I'm guessing, as a gift, a little token of my appreciation.
It was a mistake. I shouldn't have done it. It wasn't an appreciation thing. It was me making a suggestion to them that they should have a flag. And that got turned into, Pete wants this to be our flag, so we're going to do this. And he's holding it up. And I'm like, oh, shit. So that was when I realized I'm bringing too much of me into this. And that's it's a complicated thing. And so then the thing that flipped from that was I'm like, I need to get behind this guy and find out what he wants to do. And that was my liminal transfer. I needed that moment to get over the threshold so I could say, oh, shit, this guy knows how to lead his people. I need to get out of his way and find out what his plan is. So I sat and spent the next few months understanding his plan, continuing to build trust. Because no military I've ever heard of has ever found out what the governor wants to do in a time and demands like a leader would do. Like, I want to work on farming. I want to work on school. Like planks in a platform, you know, like you would have for a politician. And so I was able to bring that slowly back to the military. And even then, when they saw this PowerPoint plan of what this governor wanted to do, they're like, he didn't make this. And I'm like, he did. This is his plan. They're like, you can't work PowerPoint. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you got me there. I built in PowerPoint.
But was it the governor's ideas, though?
It was the governor's ideas. And here's even more proof to that. So when I took the plan, it took a long time. We translated it, pulled it out, and I kind of drew it out by hand to say, this is what you want. And he's like, yeah, it's what I want. I went back, made it in PowerPoint, purposefully screwed the plan up because I didn't want it to be my plan. So I brought him a plan with a lot of errors in it. And he's like, no, you dummy. Let me fix your plan. And
he put it. Afghan elder Red Fox.
You big dummy. Yeah.
The Tigris goes north to south, son.
Rollo, show him what to do. So Rollo showed him what to do. And so he fixed the plan right back to what the original was. So this was no shit, his plan. And I took it to the Army. And they're like, all right, this is what this guy wants to do. We'll get behind it. So now I was able to.
What did you present him based on? His ideas.
His ideas.
Which he told you.
Which he told me.
So then you go home, take his ideas, ruin them a little,
yep.
Bring them back to him so he can correct what he obviously is thinking. You're incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, hey, that idea is not
good. It was one of my false bubbles.
Right, but unnecessarily, because you could have just brought his plan back to him, okayed by the U.S. government, and he would have went, great.
But I had to make sure that it was his plan.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You wrote it because it was his plan.
But I didn't know if we had it right. I wanted to test it. And I also don't want the Americans to go, well, that's just your plan. You translated it wrong or whatever. I'm like, I wanted to have the test in there so I can, because remember, I got to move the Americans towards us too.
Wow.
So I do, and I also bring it back to the governor in American form in PowerPoint, and I translate that to him. And that, over time, allowed him to go, wait, you're not just saying negative things about me back to the Americans. You're actually trying to help me advance the things I'm trying to do. And so that enabled him to finally have trust. So that's how I liminally got these guys to pop out of their bubble and threshold over into a newer bubble that was closer to what the Army wanted, and got the Army to move closer to what they wanted.
Which is liminal space in itself, because yes, everyone's operating and moving a step towards something, mm-hmm, under the pretense that that's what they want.
Right.
So you are like a conductor of space and time. And when you were on the More Stories podcast, I said to you, what's your actual job title?
Mm-hmm.
And you had two different ones. You said, I fill gaps.
Yeah.
And there was an ellipsis, dot, dot, dot. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then I said, the second appearance on the More Stories podcast, Pete Turner from the Break It Down show, I said, what's your job title? What do you do? And he goes, I work in a frenetic space.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, he's a fucking spy.
That's like, true. Yeah.
BlueApron.com/more, M-O-H-R. BlueApron.com/more. BlueApron.com/M-O-H-R. You're going to want to do it because you're going to get out the, you know, you look at this week's menu, get your first three meals free with free shipping. Blue Apron, oh, it's so good. They deliver right to your house. Meals, the recipes, the ingredients, is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission, to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. I'm not a cook. I can hardly boil an egg. Actually, I cannot boil an egg. But with Blue Apron, hey, you get this great sustainable food system, setting the highest standard for ingredients, building a community of home chefs. Cook a nice meal of beef, chicken, pork, seafood, produce sourced from the farms that practice regenerative farming. Blue Apron. BlueApron.com/MOHR. Get three meals free.
So the thing that I realized as you were speaking is I want to really nail time travel because it's not what people think. Because I am certainly a time traveler and you are certainly a time traveler, yeah, as illustrated by what you just said.
Sure, right.
I mean, when I go, just play it right there. Like, you have to go to this guy and say, no, they're already, they can't wait to help you. And that's liminal space,
yeah,
because
right,
you, that's yet to be determined.
Yes.
And then you got work to do over there.
Yes.
So then you go over to the Americans after this guy goes, that's all wrong. You got to fix it. He loves it. He's ready to go.
Yeah.
All he needs is a flag.
Yeah.
And they go, hey, we can make him a cool little flag, you know?
Yeah.
So then, like, everything is like little tiny slivers of time that don't exist yet. Like when, like stand-up, it's time travel.
Yes.
I'll circle back to that. But the one thing I realized between like being uncomfortable, the mm-hmm, new soldier, the old soldier, like, wow, this is intense. Like me going up at the Apollo on let's throw tomatoes at the white comic night.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's do a room like that's not mine or that I'm comfortable in. This is really uncomfortable. I do feel it.
Okay.
But I feel it the moment they say, do you want to do a show at a Klan rally?
Right.
In, you know, Pine Bluff, wherever. And I go, yeah, I do actually. So that's when the uncomfortableness is at a low, like a mustard seed level. When I go on stage, the presence, the now of me, I am here. I'm entirely present.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that when I walk on stage, I'm going to say, are there like ever like white comics here ever? Am I like the Jackie Robinson of like white comics?
Yeah.
And you know, or something.
Something. Yeah.
Where
exactly.
They like before anything goes, they know, like I come out of the bubble and go, I know exactly how fucking kooky this is. Or like,
yeah,
at a Klan rally, go,
right,
I know, I'm in Hollywood, I know Jewish people, like, am I like grandfathered in? Like, something has to be said.
Yeah.
Like, if there's a fist fight in the audience before you go on stage, you can either act like it never happened, but it happened, so I choose to go, yeah, by the way, we have Harold Letterman on that fist fight. Okay, Jay, I got the guy in the Affliction t-shirt, he won the first couple minutes. So I always bring them up to speed. My time,
yeah.
My liminality, my space, my reality, my windshield. By saying, by the looks of it, through my lens, this doesn't make sense at all that I'm even here.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's the shared experience before I get going on shared experience. And I think that's what's missing, and I've told you this, for this academic paper that we're trying to wrap our brains around. We got to land it. It's not like high school where you had a B, good luck next time. Like, no, you're going to be in the Library of Congress if somebody said this stupid thing. You don't want that. So my thing that I said to you is it seems like the soldiers on the ground, the commanding officers up top, the head shed, down to the grunts.
Yeah.
What's missing is information that's real and truthful. And then when you go and meet with that guy that you give the flag to, the governor,
mm-hmm.
by the way, you know why we're here, right? No, what I'm about to say is entirely made up, okay? We want this entire province just to be a place where we can land planes from wherever to wherever, because when we go the other way through, you know, around Saudi airspace, and we have to go in Turkey next to where we have Trident, it costs us a fortune. So if we do it here, we save $100 million, but we're going to give you $5 million every 6 months in this province. So we'll protect you, too. But that's never said.
Mm-mm.
It's always like, hey, we want to help you have a better government. Like, well, this is my government. This is my reality. Like, you're, it's like a born-again Christian coming to the door and telling me I'm going to hell because I don't love Christ the right way.
Right.
Like, we're Christians.
Yeah. Hey,
we're governments. So the honesty is what is the unifying factor, I realize, when you're speaking, like, satisficing.
Mm-hmm.
Satisfy and suffice. The uncomfortability. It's not uncomfortable when I acknowledge what is the truth now and what I want. I want to do a show, and I realize I'm not normal here.
Mm-hmm.
The time travel in a stage of stand-up comedy, there, when I'm at the diaper-changing table, when my son's one, changing his diaper,
mm-hmm.
it's silent. Like, they're there. I'm not even facing them. It never dawned on me to see what they were doing, but I was driving home with a friend of mine. He said, I was looking at that baby on the table.
Mm.
And I go, well, that's the point, because that's all I was doing. He goes, but you don't hear what we're doing? I go, no, because I'm really looking at a baby on a table.
Yeah.
On stage. Like, I'm not thinking, man, this is quiet.
Yes.
And then the reality, what's your reality? You need to be truthful about what your reality is. This is my opinion in my reality, in my bubble. So the way you see it and the way you got to go talk to the other person, and to the person listening, I got to convince them that this is the best for them and this and that. No, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reason this is happening is there's something in it for you.
Right.
Just, this is what's in it for me.
Yeah.
Before we go any further. However, this is the benefits for you.
Right.
It's going to seem like, get the fuck out of here. Leave me alone. But if you let me buy your company, I'll have a ton of money. But you will be, whatever, franchised into 14 other cities under this umbrella and this banner, and I can put in writing you won't get screwed.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, it's a hostile takeover. So it seems like honesty is missing. Because the story you posed about what happened to you was you had to just sort of, omission, and then you got a guy going, look at this flag Pete gave us.
Yeah.
You were never allowed to just simply go, I don't fucking know.
Yeah. I think it's more complex than that, but...
Well, I thought it was the most complexing thing I... I'm glad you said that, because I'm like, Jesus.
No,
blabbermouth.
Because you can be honest, but they still don't got to believe you. And they, again, have to be ready to liminally move with you.
They don't have to believe you in order for what?
Well, they've got to believe... They don't have to do anything, right? Their reality is instability. And you're coming saying... You're coming, creating more instability, and you're saying, I've got the answer. Like, well, right now, it sure as fuck doesn't seem like it. You know, half the men I know are gone, missing, or dead. A bunch of my relatives are now refugees in other countries. All these other problems have come, and you're telling me that you've got the answer. So far, it's not so good for us, you know? Yeah, it sucks under Saddam, and we hate that, and we want to have something better, and we love George Bush, but... Right now, this shit sucks. My friend ended up dead in the ditch. So you've got to say, what's possible here? What's possible right now? You know, we came to Iraq, and we thought we're getting into this, you know, sectarian situation towards the middle 2000s, where you had this fighting between Shia and Sunni. It's really a political fight, because the Iraqis would tell me over and over again, we don't care about religion. Yeah, they're Shia. Yeah, they're Shia. We don't agree on those things. But it's like, you know... Cubs fans and White Sox fans, you know, they could be in the same family for crying out loud, but you know, it doesn't, they're not going to kill each other.
when we brought in more instability.
Well, not on the north side, no.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Here's an interesting fact for you. There are nearly 1 million new books published in the U.S. alone every year. So if you like to read, how do you choose what you're going to read? Well, that's where Fully Booked by Kirkus Reviews comes in. You see, Kirkus has been one of the top book review publications for over 80 years. They do a deep dive on thousands of titles every year, including interviewing best-selling authors and telling you what might be the hot new release before everyone else knows. And it's coming to Podcast One in just a few weeks. So keep your eyes and ears open for Fully Booked by Kirkus Reviews.
When you come in, you know, to that environment, and you bring more instability and you take away political power and give it to somebody else, it's going to be a fight. I mean, the ISIS thing is largely based on politics and everything.
Well, if I may.
Yeah, please.
The instability that they live in, mm-hmm. that you said you're going there, like, this is really unstable. You live in instability. We want it stable. Mm-hmm. A half hour ago, you had a lady in like a sandals and a kid without a care in the world.
Yes.
That's stability.
Yes.
You got six guys in a group that have ice cream in their ass, Alaska style, like just freaking out because at the imminent death over their shoulder at any moment,
right.
that wouldn't exist if they weren't there. That lady would still be acting that way.
She would be.
So that's not truthful. So it's instability, or is it a lady in sandals, a dress, a burqa, and a kid not even having a care in the world, even with your presence? Because that's not instability. That's the definition of stability, where there's a soldier on my street, and I go, how you doing, guys?
Yeah.
How are you?
Johnny Walker lived in that world, and he would tell you it was unstable. Couldn't control his outcomes from day to day.
Only going by what you said.
Right, but I'm trying to describe there is instability there. So,
oh, of course there is.
Right, and what we want to try to do is improve the condition of the Iraqis in this case, or the Afghans, by bringing education and all these, again, ethical things. Let's bring education. Let's empower females. But we end up not being truthful and having these programs that come in and people are like, look, you're working on problem 17. We're working on problem 2. But since you have $5 million, I'll take it. And I'm going to go to the Bahamas and never come back.
Who says, I want to be that guy. Who says that?
Exactly.
Sylvester McMonkey McBean, the fixer-up Chappie from the Sneetches. He takes all their money, keeps changing the stars around.
Exactly.
I feel like that's what we're doing over there.
That is exactly what we're doing. And so the guys who are like...
But what? But we're not taking their money.
No, we give them money.
Right.
And they're like, peace out. I'm out. I'm going to put my money in the stock market. I'm going to go live in the Caymans. I'm going to go to Detroit, buy a gas station, whatever it's going to be.
So liminal time is the uncertainty between what was certain. Liminal space, I should say. Time is, you know, I had a great quote. I'm like, maybe I should be like a J. Moore quote book one day.
Yeah.
You guys out there on Twitter, like, get it going.
Right.
Hashtag J. Moore quotes. I was like, time, the greatest invention, our largest prison, our greatest gift. Giving somebody your time.
Yeah.
Like when you brought that guy the flag, like maybe you thought it was a little douchey, but when you saw him, like, Pete was smiling like, look at this flag Pete gave me. Time travel is how this all started. And I've been saying, like, I'm a time traveler and I recognize other time travelers. And people think I mean, like, I woke up, I'm in the 50s.
No, I'm
wearing jeans, a white t-shirt. I said, get off my lawn. And then I, like, had a hamburger and I had a Coca-Cola. It was like drinking booze. It was great.
Yeah.
No, it's the definition of time travel is the concept of movement, such as by a human, between certain points in time, analogous to movement between different points in space, typically using a hypothetical device known as a time machine in the form of a vehicle or of a portal connecting distant points in time.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen that definition before.
Yeah, me neither.
Then I am, with certainty, on stage, a time traveler.
Yeah.
Because I get you in a nursery 4 years ago, or I get you in an abandoned mental hospital on the BMX bikes. We're skidding in the hallways.
Yes.
We live in a crazy house, but we ain't crazy. And I have to make it so you guys are not only hearing it.
Yes.
But you're kind of there. And there's times in the show, I'm not blowing myself. I'm coming to a point like time travel isn't like, okay, crazy.
I am rubbing myself, though.
Well, thank you, by the way. It's a big head.
Got to chub it up.
Big head on that beard. That's like when I tell the story about blowing the kid when I was a kid, it gets so fucking quiet. And I tell them, honesty, you guys are going to get a lot more uncomfortable in the story than I'm going to be.
Yeah.
I'm cool with it.
Right.
And then I tell the story, and then I already know what they're going to do. And then when there's nothing to sell, because I think that's what's happening over there, what you're talking about is there is a sell for you to deliver every day.
Right.
When I'm doing stand-up, there's no show. I'm not selling anything. This happened to me. I'm sharing it because that's why we're all here.
Mm-hmm.
And like that release of, hey, am I right, everybody? How about the ladies? Give it up for the girls and the guys. And I talk about when I was 10, me and this kid, Eddie Collins, blew each other. And they're so uncomfortable. And I tell them they're going to be. And I go, see, this is the uncomfortability of stuff. Then that's a laugh.
Yes.
And then I talk about making a blanket for, oh, I didn't like, I hated doing it, but I loved getting it. So I would do it longer so I can get it longer.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, now you do it to me. I said, I'm not gay. And he goes, neither am I, but I'll tell. And I'm like, well, don't tell. I'll do it.
Yeah.
Because it felt great.
Yeah.
Honestly. And then I go into a side story. It happened by accident one night about making blanket forts in your living room. And I just was like really remembering it in real time of, you know, you go, hey, Mom, can we get all the blankets for a blanket fort? And a blanket comes out. There's like a little closet on top of your closet, like old vacuum cleaning parts and blankets, like shitty blankets that nobody wants to look at. And you get like those blankets and the audience is going like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
And then I go, you tuck it. You tuck the blankets behind the furniture. There's a point to this. So hang in there, listener. And like right now, like whoever's listening, I've just changed time.
Yeah.
It's just... And you sit in there and it's quiet. It's like your first apartment. You're alone. You give your family the finger and they can't see you. And that one crochet blanket with the holes in it, it's supposed to be a pattern of flowers, but your grandma fucked up. It's like, nah, just orange and red and orange. Just use it. The sunbeam from the window would come through one of those little tiny crocheted holes.
Yeah.
And there'd be a little sliver of light coming through into this dark little blanket fort. And you thought, that's what God looks like. That's... And then you see the dust in that little light, and you think, is my whole house that dirty? I breathe that all the time? And then I just look around like this. We would blow each other.
Yeah.
They've forgotten that that's what I was talking about. Right. And they're like, no! Like, I tricked them. They get irate. Funny irate. And then I go, I did, and it was this, and it was that. The punchline, quote unquote, in quotes, that gets the biggest laugh is I say, after another long silence, here's my point. There's nothing funny about that sentence.
Yeah.
And then I explain to them that the guy I blew was the chief of police in New Jersey.
Right.
Governor, Lieutenant Governor, Chief Collins, I'm one car accident away from having blown the governor.
Yeah.
I drive as fast as I want through New Jersey. You know the bit.
Yeah.
Here's the point. Like, there's no punchline that gets that. And I realized that's what made me think of time travel. It's like a parabolic. How do you say it?
Parabolic. Yeah. Parabellum. Either way.
Parabolic.
Or a unibellum. Whatever kind of bellum you want.
No, with parabolic, I think I was saying wrong for a long time. Okay. The flights where you go straight up.
Uh-huh.
And then when you have zero gravity for like 16 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
I realized I have them in that zero gravity.
Yeah.
As long as it's quiet.
Right.
And when I say, here's my point. It's not funny. It's re-entry, bang, and they smash into the ceiling, and they make a noise.
Right.
And they're back there with me because they're just in this fucking blanket fort.
Yeah.
And that's when I was going on the road and doing theaters, and, like, I want to see how long I could stretch it and have them weightless. And the answer is infinite because I don't know. I've never run out.
Well, this is
that would be a bad show if you just did that.
You got to pay the bill.
So this is... But the patrol is the weightless... 16 seconds of weightlessness before reentry. When the firefight reality.
Yeah.
So that should be the liminal space. A firefight is so like, what is happening? What do I do with my life?
Right.
But that's so uber present. You are alive. This is skin. There's bone. There's blood. If a bullet goes through here, it could hit all of the above.
Yeah.
It could hit this. Like, also, you know where your organs are.
Yeah.
So that, I think, is part of the inverse.
It's definitely a different reality, for
and
that's, sure.
And so, a firefight is time travel.
For sure.
Because what is time? Nothing. There is no time.
Well, and I think anybody who's been in a firefight will tell you that time moves at a different pace, and you're not really in control of it until you're trained to deal with it. You know, it's a thing where you might be in a two. I've been in firefights, long firefights for modern fights, and it's like, wait, that was 2.5 hours. That's like, it was like 8 minutes. You know, and then you can think through your steps and you're like, God damn, that was really a long, but you couldn't tell it at the time too. So there's also an elasticity for time and reality, you know. I wanted to bring up a point. We had a great guy on our show. He's a bass player. We seem to have a lot of bass players on the Break It Down show, but his name's Charles Quinn. And he was a superstar coming up in Vallejo playing bass, you know, hometown of Sly Stone and all these other guys. And
that Sly Stone episode was amazing. It's episode 100 of the Break It Down show.
Yeah. And it's anybody who, that Sly Stone episode is the gem of our whole show. And we've got great ones all around it, but that one really was something special. But Charles was up and coming, and he's like, you know, I don't have what I need to play bass the way I want to play bass. So I'm going to put this bass down and go join the Navy. And he went and experienced life for 20 years and did things and seasoned.
Oh, he talked about time traveling.
Yeah, exactly. I think we talked about this. So he seasoned himself. He didn't want to go to the clubs and grind it. He's like, that's just not, I already know I can play the bass. I can't play the bass like I want to. So when he came back, what he said was, and he made us time travel in the show, because he'll close his eyes and he's like, oh, where did he go? He left the room. You know, he's not in the room anymore. You see him, but you're not there. And then he's like, here's where I am. I go and I take the Panama Canal and I translate that, because he plays keys and bass at the same time.
Wait, so he closes his eyes.
He closes his eyes. He takes off. He's gone. So he takes Tuscany and then he puts a color into it as he translates it out. And he's like, this is this yellow color. And that yellow color is represented here on the keys. Boop. And he translates these experiences into colors and then into his fingers, either onto the bass or onto the keyboard, to give the audience what they need. And it's one of the things he does really well, is the audience is no longer in that room. They're in a place, an alternate reality.
He tells the audience this.
No, but this is what he does. So he disappears and he picks a crowd with him. They don't even know where they're at. Right.
But, and real quick, this is important.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a colored keyboard.
No.
It's applying a color to a sound, like a G, I'm imagining an orange.
Right, exactly. So Tuscany equals black, which equals this sensation, Jesus. Right?
That escalated, Pete.
Pink? Sure. Yeah, but yeah, that's how he does it. That's how he takes it, kind of goes in one side and comes out as a different representation, and that moves his audience. And you can watch him do it, and you go, and if you're there with him and you allow it and you surrender some of your own liminality, you can go wherever he wants you to go, and it'll take you there.
That was a great episode. And the time travel stuff, like he's at a keyboard going from when he was in the Navy, going, okay, I was in Madrid, it's, I mean, just brown, and then like something on the black keys up there is brown.
Yeah.
And that's how the song, that's how he creates music.
That's how he gets to where he needs to be, yeah. And that's how he puts the emotion into it.
Now if you're listening and you go, well, that guy's fucking crazy. No. If you were a kid with a map of the United States, which most of us had.
Yeah.
My state color is going to be different from your state color because of that map.
Yeah.
I was 5 or 6. So each state had a different color.
Right.
There's only like 6 colors.
Yeah.
Like California was brown. There's nothing brown about California unless you're in the Inland Empire. Yeah, you know. Nothing brown about it unless you're in Linwood, you know. But that's the color. Like Texas was orange. It's just weird. So Florida was orange. That was the only one that made sense. Did you have one of those maps?
As
what? So what was like? I'm thinking of what mine was. Montana on your kid map of the United States was what color?
Like yellow color.
Mine was green. But you think of Montana, you think yellow.
Yeah.
Now.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think New Jersey's green.
It was gray.
Okay.
And more applicable. So like, I'm just saying, like, that's what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a color to the place. It wasn't assigned to him like Mm-mm. these maps were to us.
Yeah.
That we still think it.
Right.
So every time I'm telling a story about, so then I'm in Iowa, yellow. Then I'm in Iowa, you know, and I go up to Colorado, brown. Mm-hmm. Kansas, gray.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing on the keyboard. So
yes.
I get it completely. Yeah. That's, so in a way, that's inner time travel, like, because it's something that happened in your childhood that has nothing to do with the actual state that you're talking about.
Right.
So time travel is not only possible, you do it, you the listener, every day. When you're telling a story to somebody about, we're in college, right? And then halfway through, a minute in, the person across from you is nodding their head yes, smiling, because they're there. You have them there.
Yeah.
That's time travel. And I'm not nitpicking, but they're there. They're looking at your face.
Right.
They're imagining a stairwell where this happened, where the guy fell down the stairs.
Somewhere else, yeah.
The red Solo cups and the thing and the smell of the beer. They're there. And then there's always, when you're done with a big story, everybody just kind of looks at each other and try. I started doing this and it's horrible. Start looking at when people's smiles go away.
Mm.
And like some are longer, some are that, all of them heartbreakingly just, like it's a weird thing to focus on.
Yeah.
I'm a weird kid.
No doubt.
So how are you trying to solve liminal space? Well, you can't solve liminal space because it is. And I'm realizing now it's almost like Zen Buddhism of, if it doesn't make sense, you got it.
Yeah.
Or if it makes sense, you don't have it. And when you're explaining liminal space and liminal situations to non-liminal, it's not, well, it's normal to them. You're the outlier and vice versa. And then you going to your people saying, this guy's got an idea. Like you've created, now you got smaller bubbles that you've created and you're transporting because you serve two masters here.
Right.
So what is it you're wishing to do and help soldiers in dealing with their personal liminal space? And by that, you know this, like to the listener. You go to you're in Fort Bragg, and then you go just paint curbs for a summer. And you're just like, well, I guess. And all of a sudden, we gotta go. And then you're on a plane, like, fuck, that's now.
Yeah.
And then you're on a plane, and you're on that plane for 24 straight hours. Can't piss, can't shit, don't talk. Nobody knows what's happened. There's nothing to talk about.
Yeah.
That's in your anteroom there.
Mm-hmm.
Your purgatory. It's purgatory.
Okay. Yeah.
Then you're flying, 22 hours. That's just, you're just floating. You got nothing.
Yeah.
Then you land, then it's real. But then you realize where you've landed, and I got to look for Pete. He's going to give me the instructions. Until I find you, I'm adrift.
Yeah.
I find you, and the first thing you say to me is, all right, you're adrift. Let me tell you how you cannot be adrift.
Yeah.
But you're the guy that's saying, you're the reason they're going, okay, good, there's base.
Yeah.
So non-liminal space is base when you're playing tag as a kid.
Yes.
Like, got it.
Yeah.
First base is non-liminal. The run to first base, I don't know.
Yeah.
So what, this is such a peculiar thing for a guy of your intellect to feel it's a passion to communicate to soldiers how to deal with the bubble, luminality bubble that they're in, and to realize you're going to be going back and forth between bubbles.
Yeah.
Like, how does this pop into your head?
I don't know. I mean, we're watching different units make mistakes. It took a long time to think of these concepts, and that I only was able to kind of talk it through. Even now, as we talk it out, I'm still learning. Like, I thought maybe you gathered up bubbles like balloons and took them with you, but I think what you do is you convince people to surrender their bubble and enter one that you create for them.
If I have to convince them, I can't tell them.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
There's no show. This happened to me. Check this out.
Mm.
And like there's no shared experience with blowing a 10-year-old named Eddie.
Right.
when I was 10. Let's get that, smush those together there. But they're with me because I was talking to Aaron about it earlier today and he goes, it's a shared experience and it's this. And I go, yeah, but there's nothing shared about like 80% of what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's so like talking to Christopher Walken, what happened to your dog's tail? Where did it go?
Mm-hmm.
They don't know. The only thing shared is the energy of, this is fucking weird.
Yeah.
So I have to figure out, that's the portal. Mm. That's the little window of, by the way, this is really weird, right?
Yeah.
Right. So as I'm telling the story, as it happened to me, it's not a shared experience.
Right.
I got my head out like the conductor's window on a train the whole time going, isn't this weird?
Yeah.
But that's also truthful.
Yeah.
So, but what makes you, I'm not asking the question properly. What makes a guy like you, who's been on thousands of missions, been shot at, there's a price in your head in places, say, we got to really work with soldiers dealing with liminal space?
Yeah, well, I mean,
most of them on armor on the Humvees.
Because I've shared their liminal space and gotten out of it. They don't realize they're in this liminal bubble, right? Like you talked about the transportation from A to B. I've been on the flight where they've got I don't know, 1,000 high explosive rounds are going to go into our arty cannons. I mean, these are 3 foot high ballistic things that are going to blow things to pieces. And so I'm on there with soldiers looking around and like, that's flying to where we're going. That puts you in a space where you're like, we've trained for combat. You know, we've been assessed on how straight we shoot and how we perform our specific tasks, whether it's shooting artillery or driving a tank or maneuvering on the battlefield as an infantry guy. All that stuff is being put into your bubble. That is your reality. The Army takes you out of your neighborhood, your New Jersey curb, you know, back on the block bubble, and they go, no, you're now into this bubble where you're going to read and you're going to learn about war and combat. And then you get there, and there's Pete. He's like, hey, I got ice cream. You want some ice cream? And they're like, fuck yeah, I want some ice cream. So I give them ice cream, and they're like, wait, you're all right. And I'm like, yeah, I also understand your bubble. You guys are in this bubble, and you think there's a lot of threat here. And there is. But there's also a lot of things that you have to pay attention to that aren't threat-based. Like this guy over here, his daughter runs his house. And if you want to learn about women and where they may be going, you want to talk to that guy. You got to go respect that guy over there on the other side of the valley. He's like, if my daughter has the radio in her hands, I will slap the shit out of her because I don't want her listening to that nonsense. Two dudes, 100 yards apart, totally different realities. That's your reality, soldier. You've got to deal with this population, not the Taliban guy who's never going to fight you because it doesn't benefit him to take on an army unit ready to kill. Why? If you and I were going to go fight the army, we wouldn't fight them directly, right? We would find some surreptitious way to come in the back door or whatever.
I'd act like they're friends, and then I'd be like, we should probably share the bunk. And then we're sleeping. I'd cuddle, and I'd fuck them.
Mm-hmm. See? Nice.
But I'd pick the guy that likes it. But I don't know if you explained liminal space there. You explained pragmatism.
Well, I'm explaining what their reality is, and I'm trying to illustrate for them. And it's hard because I don't know for that unit until I get to know them better. I'd have to know their very specific liminal bubble that they're in, their reality. I mean, I understand the basic military reality because
why does it need to be expanded from I'm a stranger, I'm boots on the ground.
Right.
I have a mission coming, but I don't have it yet. That's liminal space.
Okay.
Like I'm here, I'm ready to go. I'm all dressed up with nowhere to go. That's liminal space. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you get your orders and you go, I got to go to these three houses. There's a jackpot inside, hopefully, one of the three.
Right.
I got to protect this. I got to do that. So the any instruction from the government, from the high ups, is a relief because it's a break from waiting.
Yeah.
Like acting is a relief because you just sit in a trailer for 9 out of 12 hours waiting.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting. And like, oh, the places you'll go, the waiting place. It's the worst place.
Right.
So to get them to, I could help you with your, what was it you said? Like you would say to them, hi, I'm Peter, some ice cream. I can help you with your bubble.
Yeah, you're in this bubble. This is your reality. You don't realize it because you have no other way to realize it.
Do they realize it?
Yeah, they don't realize it. So I'm in their bubble and I transport with them wherever they go on the battlefield, right? And then they all have their, like, there's threat around every corner. We found a weapons cache. Meanwhile, I come back, like, look at all the stories I found when I was out there. You know, this guy, his guy's daughter runs his life. She absolutely has him wrapped around his finger. And they're like, wait a second, what? He's got a daughter just like me? And whatever she says, he does? Oh, shit. My reality isn't as crystal clear as I thought.
But is that liminal space, or is that just like going about one directive two different ways? Your guy's going to go out, secure the perimeter.
Right.
I'm going to do the same. But as I go, I'm going to say, how are you?
I can't get them to understand the threshold until I make it safe inside that next bubble that's there for them. I can see that there's a bubble that they need to get closer to where the realities can be coexistent between the villager and the military unit.
And I think that's where time travel ties in here.
Yeah, I think
because you have to choose the exact time, theirs, because you will look like you're running through the front door of that mosque.
Yeah.
You will look like you're late and disrespectful if you're like, you know what, you know, it's like double dutch. You have to pick the exact time.
Right.
And then I guess the exact time is when you do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you lead with honesty.
Yeah.
Well, I'm asking these questions because I'm on patrol because the reason we're here, you know, quote unquote instability, when in reality is whatever that is.
Right.
So is that a big problem with soldiers that if they don't know it's liminal space and they're in a bubble?
Right.
are you doing more harm than good by trying to get them to see it? Like if I go to a psychiatrist, I do these, they call them excavational digs about my childhood. I'm like, oh, I didn't know my babysitter, you know, molested me. Like now I feel horrible.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I just filed that shit away for survival.
Yeah.
Like, ugh.
That's a fair question. And I don't know the answer. I believe that I'm helpful and that's why I do it. You know?
Oh, I know you're helpful.
But do they understand that? And that's, again, that's where I've got to have the trust on both sides, where I've got
to
look
like... You know the trust of the guys you're giving ice cream to, and you already got the trust of, like, an Afghan chief?
Right.
Then there's a way bigger thing that needs to be addressed.
Right. But the new unit comes in, a whole new bubble I've got to get into, right? So it's like, well, who have you? Like, well, I'm the guy that's been here. I've been talking. I have the relationships. I'm talking to people you guys don't even know exist. I can't say that.
I spotted a flaw for you, to help you.
All right, well, please.
They have to get into your bubble.
They don't have to do anything.
If they
will get into my
bubble.
If
they want your help.
Right.
If they want to live longer.
Yes.
And have better results, you going into their bubble, explaining that they're in a bubble, they're going to walk around and bump into each other for a few days before they hear anything else that you say.
Yeah.
But if you can get them to come to your bubble when they're getting their ice cream and say, you know, it's amazing that you see this lady, like, with, look, she's wearing, like, flip-flops. And the kid's wearing like a Kobe Bryant jersey.
Yeah.
And they're not nervous at all. I was on patrol the other night. Yeah.
Can he be wearing the 1992 Buffalo Bills World Champion shirt instead? That's the one I always want to find.
Yeah. Yeah. Those ones. Green Bay Packers back to back.
Yeah, exactly.
I have two of those. So it's like maybe explain to them, have them go into your reality, which is the truth. Then you're not intrusive. Then you're not talking to a group. They're talking to a dude
right.
that knows shit.
I'm trying to get free access. I should have it automatically, but they don't have that trust. So I've got to get free access within the Army. And so I'm going to tell a story and I'm going to try to explain this well. So Dr. Rich and I, who, we're at the unit, we're trying to help them. They're new, they don't know any better. Their goal is to push south and destroy the Taliban because that's what they're supposed to do. Now, while this is happening, this is a very mountainous area, very dangerous area as far as Taliban goes. But the Taliban, what they don't know, the Taliban's not fighting anybody. They're not actively engaging. They're refusing to fight because they don't have to. They know we're leaving, and they already have the influence with the farmers. Why are they going to fight us? There's no point in doing that. So in the reality, in the time for that brigade's 5,000 or so people that they've trained for this fight. This is their battle plan. They come in and they don't know who we are. They don't expect us to be there. Even if they do,
who's us? Because you're a spy.
Yeah. Well, in this case, I'm just Pete, the civilian guy, using my spy skills to do this liminal hopping.
With what branch?
Department of Defense.
Okay.
But also in support of the State Department. So I've got an office, and that's about it. And they're like, "Yeah, we'll get to you in a couple of months once we've settled down and got our plan in place." So I know enough to know now by doing this a couple of times that we can start to apply our influence. And we're like, hey, you really don't want to push south. It's the wintertime. The roads won't handle it. The vehicles you have are old.
Why would you say all that instead of just saying they're not going to be there?
Because they won't believe that. They're like, because they want the fight. So we just start illustrating things. I'm predicting the future. I'm trying to time travel for them. I already know they're not going to listen to me. And so we say, look, you really don't want to do that. The last unit tried to do that. And I've said, I've been here through a number of units. I've seen this plan. I understand the playbook. You guys really need to orient 180 degrees the opposite direction. This is like a cruise ship. I'm trying to steer it, and I'm not the captain. I got a fancy suit on, maybe an ascot, but I got no business telling the captain where to go. So over time.
What about Tennille?
Oh, now she, in those white pants.
What about the bulldog?
So nice. Album cover? Yes. What was the bulldog's name?
Who cares?
Right,
stupid guy in the middle.
So I want to get back to the thing.
Yeah, of course.
So we're there and we're trying to tell them. So while this happens, this is just where the hand of God comes down and helps you out. In the mountain pass, they want to go through a giant rock. And I mean, so big, you can't even comp, bigger than a house. Falls into the pass. The Army doesn't even know about this. We find out because we know people. And they're like, yeah, this giant rock just fell in the pass. It's hilarious. You know, we all don't know what to do. There's nothing to do. This thing's so big. So we tell the Army about it. And they're like, what are you talking about? There's no rock that fell in the pass. We're like, yeah, it's a rock that fell in the pass. Would you like us to get you a picture? Like, there's no rock. So we get them a picture of the rock that's in the pass for their push south. They can't go around it. We tell them, you can't go around this rock. It's gigantic. And so the engineer, who's an army guy, is like, there's no rock on earth I can't move. Like, so cue the biggest rock on earth that he can't move. He can't blow it up because all the rest of the rocks will come down. They have nothing big enough to drag it out. So basically someone just, God just put a cork in their path. And they're like, fuck, maybe we can't push this. So that just gives us a little bit of influence. Meanwhile, Rich and I are out writing reports that are illuminating different things inside the bubble that the Army can't see. Luckily for us, the commander, this brigade commander, this guy's going to be a general, he understands it. He's been around. He's like, wait a second, you guys are showing me things that I've not seen anywhere else. But he doesn't say that to us. He's internalized this. And he's jumped into our bubble because he's a smart guy.
But he hadn't said it to you, but you know he feels it.
We find out that he does, but I don't know this yet.
Why doesn't the Army know that if you push south, the Taliban's not going to engage?
Because they're not trained for that. That's not what the program is.
The people that sent the troops there.
Yeah.
That's the number one piece of data they should know.
Right.
So you're not sending all those pairs of shoes and boots and clothing and soap and mouthwash and ready to...
But they can't know. It's not part of their reality. The higher up you get, the more the reality is not anywhere near what's on the ground.
But when you... I understand that. Yes, and.
Mm-hmm.
You know it as 100% fact. Under penalty of perjury, if I'm lying, put me in a stockade, I'll die there, but I'm not wrong. You've told someone. You share that information with somebody. Someone told it to you.
Right.
It's talked about there.
Right.
Amongst American soldiers. How does that not go a little bit up the flagpole?
Because I don't have authority with these guys. I'm new.
Okay. But if I'm going to send a brigade to a place to do something that's like, hey, at the restaurant when they go, hey, quick, new guy, give me some sky hooks and a bucket of steam. And you run around, but there is nothing. There's no such thing. That's essentially the mission. And then eventually some guy goes, hey, you know there's no such thing as a bucket of steam. He's breaking your balls, right? And you're like, what?
Yeah,
and sky hooks, like, come on.
Yeah.
But there's somebody you speak to. I mean, you talk to captains, majors, colonels.
It takes time. It's just like...
Buddy, we've been there 2 decades for crying out. Like, wait, what? If the Army doesn't know they're sending troops on a fool's errand of nothingness, they're creating crazy people that are waiting to be shot at. It never happens.
It's the example you gave the other day, like with the cup. You keep pouring tea into the cup. Keep pouring tea into the cup. That's the Army. They're like, we keep fighting.
Overflowing
like,
all over the place.
Like, stop, empty the cup.
Can't enjoy your day.
Right. You know, it's all those lessons that we're trying to teach them. So.
Same question.
Yeah.
How does the Army not know that if you drive south in the winter, the Taliban, knowing we're going to leave, is not going to fight? It doesn't behoove them to fight. How does the Army in its entirety not know that?
Because they can't know it. They won't know it.
Which is it?
It would because they can't and they won't. They can't process the fact that this fight is not a fight they understand. Remember, this is modern combat. So military is an aspect, but there's social, cultural, political, and religious.
Let's keep it as small as possible, okay?
They can't know it.
They can't know it because why?
That is not their reality.
Well, until somebody goes, this is our 16th time south.
It doesn't work like that.
It's a ghost town every time.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that.
Takes the 17th time, boys. Is it like that?
Yeah. And you need to have someone who can come in and shrink that learning curve. They'll learn it.
That's a lot of money. I know people don't realize how much money is involved. Like when you crash a jet, you don't think about your life. You're going, oh my God, $160 million. I'm never going to hear the end of it.
Yeah, and that's a cheap jet.
I was picking one. So it's like $300 million jet.
Sure.
And you're like, I can't believe they're going to break my balls. Like you're going, darn, you try to save it.
Right.
Like you didn't think about your life.
Mm.
So the amount of, I can't keep asking the question because you're saying they can't know
they
it.
They can't know it.
Why?
Because their whole world is about combat and threat.
And there's no combat here.
There's no combat here.
So that's what they should know if that's your whole world.
And what they're going to spend 99% of their time doing is non-lethal things. But they'd spend maybe 1% of their time training.
Go south and drive the Taliban out of the valley.
Right.
That's not combat. So 90% of what you're saying
Well, the Taliban will fight them on the way down at the thought. That's what they're prepared for, the Taliban.
And they've been proven it's not true.
Over and over.
So they're not looking at their own results.
Right. Over and over again. Just like we keep building
schools. So that's a bubble I don't want to be in at all.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
But you have to be, because that's the reality. I'm there with them. I have to help them. And so I have to get them oriented as quickly as possible towards this less than lethal operation. But they don't want that because they're a combat unit. So there we are, sitting there in the briefing room. And the colonel says, before we start this briefing, and there's probably 40 people, there's probably 100 people in this room, 40 to 100, I can't remember exactly. There's a lot of people in this room. And Dr. Rich and I, second row, not primetime people, he says, before we start this briefing, there's two guys that are going to brief. And he hasn't heard our brief. He just knows basically from our slide what we're going to say. I want you guys to listen to what these guys are saying. Because what we're doing is not working. We're not the first unit here. And we look around and we don't know what's going on. So listen to what these guys have to say, because I don't want a pile of shit of things that we've done and not accomplished. I'd rather do one thing well. That took that unit and made all those people, popped all their bubbles, and they were like, wait a second, what? We're in a bubble? Because the commander had seen it enough times, he knew good things when he saw it. And so he was able to reorient his entire plan 180 degrees towards finding the people that were going to make a difference, instead of finding, you know, the next bad guy in line. Because you can't ever find all the bad guys. It's like we keep killing the top ISIS guy. They're still ISIS.
Yeah, they don't wear signs. They don't wear uniforms.
But, right, yeah.
And we're around the third here. I would say to come full circle.
Yeah.
You knowing you're not going to really be shot at, and that drive south to drive the Taliban out. Like, mm-hmm. These guys are like, yeah, let's go.
Let's
Wolverines,
do it. Yeah.
And you're just like, you're in the yellow, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Which is this level of slightly heightened.
Yeah. You know?
That's the most liminal space, because you know something that nobody else knows. And even though you're not sharing a reality.
Yes.
Your reality is, I've done this trip 8 times. I've been proven right.
Yes.
I've had commanders say this is correct.
Yeah.
That one guy shares my reality.
Right.
So as you're driving south and knowing nothing's going to happen, and every night when they go to bed, they go, all right, let's just get like 2 hours. Let's get a head start, because you know what? Our time's fucked up. If we go a little earlier, catch them off guard, and we'll just blow these fuckers out, and we'll blow them up, and this, and you just hear it and go, where the fuck am I? Like, why am I still here?
Yeah.
Like, you're so floating here. But then when that one guy goes, he's going to talk to you because he knows what's up.
Yeah.
That's what gets you through liminal time other than your own self-excavation. And that's what gets you through reality when it's questioned.
I think
personal experience is one person, whether it's Corey, Aaron, you, that commander, a coach, to go, oh, no, it's fucked up. And you go, that's all I needed to hear.
I think what we're trying to say, you used your Wolverine example, so I'm going to build on that. We're trying to convince Pat Swayze that he's really in Dirty Dancing and not out there fighting against the Russians. And they can't believe that, because they have to be Pat Swayze fighting against the Russians instead. I think that's really what we're trying to convince them. And that's not easy for Pat Swayze to go.
Pat Swayze's mortal.
Yeah. He's like, wait a second.
Wolverine ain't mortal.
No, I thought you meant Wolverine.
Yeah.
So like Red Dawn style.
Yeah. So you want them to go like, you're not this character.
Yeah.
You're the actor.
Well, I want him to go, I want him to be in a different movie. I want him to be in Dirty Dancing instead. Quit being in Red Dawn and go be in Dirty Dancing, or go be in Ghost.
And he's going, but...
But my script says...
But I'm holding the script for...
Yeah, right. So I've got to say...
It's so fucking nutty over there.
Yeah.
It's like, it just feels like, just pull the plug and go. And let's not get into
that. Yeah, right.
Like, that's what I was saying to you and Johnny Walker when you're both like, no. Like, I was exasperating you guys.
Yeah.
Liminal space, the space between, the space, can you pull it up again? A different demo?
No, it's dead.
It's dead. Dead is Dellinger.
It's dead.
So a lot of you guys, right now, this is interesting, I think, because there's people out there that aren't sure, like, what's wrong with me?
Fuck?
And I would say maybe you're operating with liminality, and that is you're not quite at the room. You're not in the room you want to be in. During liminal periods of all kinds, everything's uncertain. The outcome is uncertain because there's nothing being done to get an outcome. You just came from an outcome with you being in that space. Like I think getting fired is a good example, because, wait, how did I lose that job? I was really good.
I was loyal.
When will I get another job? Mm-hmm. So you're looking back, you're looking for, you're on a train between stations.
Yeah.
But if you look inside and go, why did I lose my job? What there was something I did.
Yeah.
Period. Or there's something I wasn't producing, whether it's something way above my pay grade. Like Gary O'Meara got canceled. Mm-hmm. And I had no liminality about it getting canceled because if it made CBS enough money, they'd keep it. The end. Mm-hmm. But it was a really good show. Yeah. Did it make them money? Or it'd still be on the air. The right. end.
Yeah.
So then you go, well, how do I ensure I get another job? How do I find what it was and never make that mistake again? As opposed to just freaking out in this purgatory of space. And that's all I know is liminal time.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. Oh man, you walked into a fucking household of liminal time, liminal space.
I feel like the whole post election thing is a people liminally not able to see each other, you know, not capable of doing it because their reality is so it's in a steel bubble, and people who would normally be kind to each other can't be kind even. I'm not trying to start a political conversation, but
do you
I think
question
it's a good example.
Your reality?
I think you have to if you want to understand it.
But do you question it out of, like, I must not be in the reality?
I believe I have to test all the time to make sure that what I think is real is real. And I don't mean like I'm
No,
crazy,
I
want to
know how you feel. Because there's this thing of the Finding Joseph documentary when the manager goes, I have to let him know there's, like, reality. Mm. And you're off to the side, like, this is reality. There's only one reality. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Like, your reality, I don't know. I asked right. you a question earlier, and you go, you know. I go, no, I don't.
Yeah.
I'm not a soldier. I don't right. know. That's reality for you. But I find myself going, am I, like, do I have a fucking spike tail where I just knock shit over as I go through places? Because when it gets back to me, it's always, like, a negative thing.
Right.
There's a voice ascribed to me, like, and you were like, maybe we had lunch around here. You're like, well, first of all, I don't think I sound like that. Second of all, it was 8 a.m.
Yeah.
And third of all, I wouldn't really throw in a shit fit over lunch. And they're like, it was pretty crazy, man. And you're like, well, that ties to what somebody else said like a month ago.
Yeah.
Like, you can really go mad.
I think maybe your liminal bubble shrinks in around you and you become more egocentric and mono perspective. Whereas, like, guys like us who experience a lot of other people's liminality, I sat across from Shaka today. All I can do is collect perspective and understand that, you know, there before the grace of God go I, you know, how would I do differently in Detroit as a young dude without all the advantages, you know, and you start to see more multiple perspectives and you guys like us can expand our bubble and bring other people into that bubble because we have these different experiences. That's all I can say about testing because I just think that we have a willingness to see other cultures, see other realities. You know,
I just meant day to day. Like, oh, Rob Bell's the best at it. I'm yeah. talking like day to day. Do you just say to yourself, like at the grocery store? Like, I like Psychology Today, Pete. We'll end on this. Be careful not to let your self-esteem slip in liminal space because things did not work out. A poor fit doesn't indicate that you're flawed. It's a sign you haven't found the right fit. Goodness of fit. It's a great boon, but it doesn't always occur. If the fracture was because you erred, forgive yourself and move on. Sometimes we err because we unconsciously, we want out. And tripping ourselves up is a way of escaping. So if you're in transition and floating in liminal space, trust that the answers will come. You'll feel better. You can change, find new answers, and you'll land on your feet. And that's that. And you'll have a lot of relief. So I do feel like liminal time is the actual real time that Buddhist monks are looking for and yeah. looking at yourself. But you're a searcher, man. You haven't even landed on what you're searching. That's what I love about you.
I don't know where I'm going. I just try new shit all the time.
hire Pete Turner to talk to your company because you need to be hiring vets and you need to be hiring guys that have come back and you need to be of service to our men and women that serve overseas. And Pete's the guy that can help your company transition over and they can get in touch with you, smoke signal.
Yeah, PeteAturner.com or just Pete.Turner at Culture, LinkedIn, Twitter, all of it. Pete A. Turner.
That's a weird address.
Pete A. Turner.
PeteAturner.com.
Yep. I'll be right there. You send me an email.
Yeah. Buddy, there's a windfall of all good coming your way. I know it. I've been to the future. I can tell you this.
Nice. Do I have nice pants?
I think we're pantsless.
Oh, that's the best party.
Break It Down show is Pete Turner's. Listen to Shaka Singora on that. And just listen to all of them. Just hit subscribe. Corey, you're going to get back on the Twitter and get involved and because you're funny as hell. And it's Fry Fry?
Mm-hmm. Fry Fry
42. F-R-Y, F-R-Y 42. Big Jackie Robinson fan of this one.
Oh, yeah?
Sorry, Mariano Rivera. You know what? Mo Vaughn, I'm sorry. Those two assholes kept the number after it was retired.
Mo Vaughn used the I'm too fat defense for DUI and he won.
Well, let's do it. Twinkie defense. I'm too fat defense.
Yes.
It couldn't have been me. I was in liminal space.
That's right.
Hello, darling. Pete Turner, Break It Down Show. I love you, brother. I'm glad to see you. Let's talk about your day yesterday off mic. My friends, email me morestories3737. Let me know what you got at the Amazon banner, or just tell me what you don't like about the podcast. Tell me what you dig. Wash our bowls.
Put your name on it.
Face.
I'm Mick Garris. When it comes to horror, you might know me as a writer, producer, and director. But I also love making people open up. I'm getting together with the most fascinating people in fright filmmaking. I'm going to pick their brains and find out what they know. But if they've got any secrets they're determined to keep, I have ways of making them talk.
Download new episodes of Postmortem with Mick Garris every other Wednesday at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or you can subscribe on iTunes.